This is Deanna Spingola. It is Wednesday, May 29th, 2013, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guests today are Clint Richardson and Freeman Burt, and they're going to talk about the law and the militarized government. The websites are, for Burt, onlyfreemen.com, and for Clint, realityblogger.wordpress.com, clint4p.com, and thecorporationnation.com. And right before we went live, I was mentioning to Clint about his fabulous pictorial history of the United States. And be sure and look at that. It will take you some time to go through it because there are at least, what is it, 100 pictures there?
Yeah, I guessed about 100. Yeah, it took me a long time to put them together, so I didn't feel like counting them at the end.
Ah, it's fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. I know somebody who says that they can hardly wait until the Jews take control, and that he was really eagerly looking forward to it, so I'm going to send this to him.
Well, what makes him think that the Jews haven't already taken control?
He's one of those Christian Zionists who are waiting the day for the chosen to take control of the rest of us.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm working on a massive research project right now, and it's I'm calling it Cracking the Cult of the Constitution.
Ah.
And you know, one of the things I'm looking at is the Masonic history of the United States, and of course, you know, I've got this beautiful, beautiful book. It's huge, and it's called the Masonic Red Letter Edition Masonic Bible of King James Version, and it is completely indexed, sourced, and in the beginning of that book is a complete question and answer thing, and also a text from, you know, Morals and Dogma from Albert Pike, and then also at the very beginning, it's very clear that the United States was begun by the Masons. It's very, very, very clear, according to their writings, how America was created by Masons. It actually says that 53 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Master Masons.
Right.
Washington being the Grand Master Mason of America, one of the actual most honored Grand Mason of America. So,
and yet they try and whitewash that or water it down and say, oh, yeah, but that was before he knew about how evil they were.
Oh, absolutely, sure. Absolutely not. No, and it's interesting because, you know, there were two sects of Masons, and one was for England proper and one was for the crown. So, I mean, the crown being more of the, you know, like the United Kingdom aspect as opposed to just England. So, I mean, it's very, very interesting. And the stuff that's in this, I just can't wait to release because it's incredible. It's really, really incredible. But it specifically tells you also that Freemasonry is very much based on the reconstruction in a symbolic form of King Solomon's temple, and has its roots very, very much in Jerusalem. In other words, in Judaism. It even says that Saint Peter, I believe, was the creator of both Judaism and Christianity, if you can
really
contemplate what that means. It's a very interesting, very, very interesting look into how this country was created. And so I'm basically, you know, that's one aspect of it, but also breaking down the Constitution to see what it actually says, to see what the words mean, and why they're capitalized. No one really considers the proper noun usage of the way the Constitution is actually written. It is very, very much a Masonic way of writing. The
right.
Masons would always capitalize certain words, which meant that they had a very specific meaning as opposed to a general meaning. And when you read the Constitution under, you know, the way it's actually written, which is Masonically, it takes on a whole new meaning.
Well, this is going to make you very, very popular in certain patriot groups.
Yeah, you mean they'll hang me?
Maybe.
They'll hang me for being a non-patriot.
Yes,
That was the
yes.
question again. The first question I asked is, when you're pledging allegiance to the flag, what exactly are you pledging it to? Do you know? Because I mean, the flag itself is an exact replica of the East India Company flag.
Yes.
The only difference is that the British symbol got replaced with the, 50 stars.
Sure.
Francis Bellamy, of course, was the creator of that pledge. He
Yes.
lived from 1855 to 1931, so of course the pledge had nothing to do with America. It had to do everything with the Admiralty flag.
Right.
And he was a socialist hired by James P. Upham, who needed a way to sell more issues of his magazine.
Yes, you've been reading my book.
Exactly. So, but I mean, I've got these pictures of, before we put our hands to our heart to salute the flag, you have children raising their hands to the flag, communism style, fascist style. Before the hand went over the heart, that was how we were pledging our allegiance to the flag. And of course, if you're pledging your allegiance to the flag, that means you're pledging it to the corporation for which that flag represents.
Yes.
So the original Pledge of Allegiance was, I pledge allegiance to my flag and the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Under God was not added until 1953, and the United States of America was added in 1923. So, the history of this country is so darn different than what we believe, and for the most part, these patriots that you're talking about that I'll be so popular with really need to understand what it is that they are patriotic about, because I think if they did, they would not at all be confused that this country was one done, with under
Right. The War of Independence and all that stuff.
Right.
Sure.
So, I mean, that brings us to the Constitution. And of course, the Constitution is another very, very misunderstood thing because, it specifically says that the Constitution is under admiralty and maritime law. Well, that's international law. And maritime law is basically military, admiralty being a military word. So, what we wanted to, or what I wanted to really talk about today, with the help of Bert, who's much more affluent in some of this stuff, is the concept that first of all, the Constitution did not create independence, no more than the Federal Reserve Act created independence for the Federal Reserve in the way that people believe. In other words, independence is a very tricky word because it doesn't necessarily mean a separation. It just means the ability to self-govern outside of the rules, which is exactly what the Federal Reserve does outside of the general halls of Congress, because Congress, again, doesn't have time to.
To do any really real work, all they have time to do is collect money and
Spend
brown nose people, corporations, that kind of thing.
their multi-million-dollar expense accounts, right?
Yes.
So, I don't want to hog the conversation here because, but I think Bert can really put this down in a more in a more legal fashion, and we can possibly get to the conclusion. The conclusion that I've come to is that all law, no matter where you are, what country you're in, all law is military in the end. In other words, the Congress can pass every law it wishes to, but if it doesn't have a military to back up that opinion or that law, then really there is no law. And so, by the very necessity of a society or a country must, in fact, be military, which is why it follows this set of maritime and admiralty law, which is specifically mentioned in the Constitution. So.
And of course, the police force, the domestic police force, along with the military, function to enforce that law.
Well, yeah, Bert, you know this better than me. The part of the job description of a local corporate municipal corporation police officer is to obey or, excuse me, enforce the federal code, federal U.S. code, correct?
Exactly, and that's what a lot of even some of these very good-hearted people that are in the police department, they don't realize that they are just part of the armed forces of the federal government. There is armed forces, there's uniform, and there's also non-uniform parts of the armed forces. And basically, the easiest way for people to realize what this is like you were saying. I mean, Congress passes a law or a regulation, but then who enforces it? It's the executive branch. And the executive branch, what do they have at their disposal is some kind of an armed force. They may be whatever. They may be a security guards. They may be whatever they want to call it, but they enforce it. And the part that's missing though is they enforce it and they have the right to enforce it on who? You know, and that and that's basically where I am is trying to make it clear to people that none of these statutes apply to the free people. They only apply to themselves. But the ultimate goal of every body politic, which is what Clint is getting at, is to eventually militarize the zone of their influence so that the people on top can get wealthy and extract the wealth out of the people at the bottom.
And let's be clear too, there's a certain hierarchy that's here, starting from the lowest level would be your municipal police, who are all acting actually under the really acting under the authority of the local or county, I should say, sheriff, who is the executive of that county, the executive, the top lawman of that county. And the municipal police, which are municipal cities within the county, all basically are getting their authority from the state and from the sheriff. So the sheriff is acting as the executive or the military branch or arm of both the courts and of the local police. You take that to the next level, which is the state level. You have the governor. In Canada, that governor is called the governor general. The governor here has the lieutenant governor. All of these are military positions. Why do I say that? Because the governor is the commander in chief, just like the president is of the United States is the commander in chief. The governor is the commander in chief of the state National Guard. When the National Guard is not called as a group force of all 50 states, where the president would be commander in chief, it is the governor who is in charge of the National Guard of his state. So that's the executive arm of the state government. And of course, states are nothing. There is no states' rights. The states are nothing but federal, whatever you want to call them, possessions, insular. I mean, they're just governments of the federal government. And then you go to the national level, which is the federal level. And you have the president, the executive branch, which is the again the strong arm. He holds. He's the commander in chief of the entire military plus the National Guard, and that is the military strong arm of Congress and the Supreme Court. I think it's also important to note that while the Constitution described the Supreme Court as a separate entity, it is not, in fact, a separate entity. The Supreme Court was created very much like every other executive branch or office by Congress through the Judicial Act of 1789. So the Supreme Court was not created by the Constitution, it was simply talked about. But it was actually created, which makes it a statutory court. So it's actually part of the executive branch, even though they don't label it that way. So really, the Supreme Court does not have the it really doesn't have the power that it is supposed to have it, because it is, and it's just viewed that way, and people are fooled into thinking that this group of, what is it, seven or nine men and women can somehow decide that human genes can be patented. I mean, this, why do we let this happen? Why do we let seven people who are obviously cousins and always have been cousins of the president who appoints them, why do we let them decide these things? You know, what is it about us that gives the Supreme Court so much power? I mean, Bert, what is the Supreme Court?
It's just a little arm of the president who give opinions. That's all they are.
And just the president is the one that nominates people. So, I mean, that tells you right there that who's really in charge.
Exactly. So, can you have an impartial court if the president is, you know, appoints these people, and of course the Senate confirms them? But can you have an impartial court that would actually do something about, say, the president running guns through his ATF, if the members of that Supreme Court are all related to and appointed by that president? I mean, do you think that a court that derives its power from the executive and from Congress would ever rule against Congress? I mean, it's it's not an independent branch naturally, as the Congress and the executive are, according to the Constitution. Instead, it was again created by Congress, and therefore it is controlled by Congress.
Yeah, I mean, it was just another legislative act that created another legislative body. I mean, the United States was never really fully completed, like you correctly said, because the judicial branch wasn't created at the conception of the so-called United States. But the way I'm looking at these things now, to me, it really doesn't matter. whether there's a United States or a United States of America or whatever they want to call it. Because if we were to look, for example, let's look at Walmart. Walmart is growing exponentially, right? I mean, it's huge, that corporation.
Well, you know, the government is the main shareholder in that company. Besides the family of the Walmart, the government is the main institutional holder. So most of the public taxes that are collected are being invested into these types of corporations. So, yeah, it's huge. It has the public funding behind it.
Yeah, so what if Walmart was to have enough wealth and enough clout to create its own army?
They probably do.
Well, they probably do. I mean, who would stop them from changing this whole northern section and calling it, you know, the United States of Walmart.
Walmartopia.
Yeah, or right. Whatever they want to call it. It's all business, and that's what people need to realize, that that romantic view of what the United States was, or United States of America is supposed to be, it doesn't really exist. I mean, it's not dead, and that's the point that I want to get across. It's not dead. It's the true law, the true way that we're supposed to live is still there. The problem is that everything has been commercialized, and we operate in a commercial, coerced system.
I mean, is it safe to say that the United States or America is more of an ideal than an actual thing? And to keep that ideal alive would take completely opposite of what we have today. We have a government-induced education system that teaches us that everything
propaganda.
Is okay. Right. So, I mean, really, America, the concept of it is just an idea. It has never been anything but.
It's an illusion. It's an illusion that we've been indoctrinated with.
And what happened is that the Constitution was created and then it was completely demolished and changed because it was designed to be changed. It was designed to be exempted from. So basically, anything goes in this country, and people have to really realize that, as you can see in U.S. Code and what Congress is doing now. Just take the biological weapons that I've talked about before. I mean, you want to see what government can do to you, just go read that title. and you can see that government can conduct any experiment, bombard you with any radiation it wishes to. Yeah, I mean, it's not what we think. It is not. It is a dream, the American dream, really. It's an idea.
And you know, and that's what I'm trying to work on is separating the reality. And of course, Glenn and I, we have these conversations every now and then, because like you just said, Deanna, it's an illusion. But we have to use the illusion to our advantage, because these people that are currently in power, the reason they are in power is because most of the people live under this illusion. If you were to take the illusion away, you know, I would think a lot of these people would go get their pitchfork and, you know, go after all these politicians, because they would realize that it's all a lie. And once people really begin to see that the District of Columbia is actually a foreign country, and it could be anywhere. It could be in China. It could be in the North Pole. It could be anywhere. It's a foreign thing. It's a foreign parasite that is living off of the people in the rest of the, not just the what people relate to as the States United, but actually they're a parasite living off of the whole world. That's why they don't care.
And, you know, let's talk about that, because, you know, I went to the a friend of mine wanted to go to the Reagan Presidential Library, which is not a library at all. It's a propaganda museum, basically, to show you all the wonderful things that Reagan did, which is just, I mean, it's a lie. Talk about an illusion. So I went through this thing, and at one point, I got so emotional about it that I realized what was happening. I realized that these people were being walked through this museum, and they were being brainwashed. And the only person in there I felt that was seeing what was happening was myself. I mean, I even heard a young girl. They had a little girder up from the 9/11 from the World Trade Center, and she actually asked her mother about, well, I heard that something else happened that day. And her mother was very, very adamant and, you know, shut her up and said, no, that's conspiracy theory and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And the poor girl, I wanted to go over and tell her, look, there's others, you know, out there. Don't give up just because mama says so. You know, think logically.
Clint, this is very similar to walking through a Holocaust museum, sure. Which is like walking into kind of a sanctuary, a church or something, right. Which lends the idea of Holocaustianity. And people get very emotional. And it's all based on emotion, whether you're pledging allegiance to the flag or whether you're listening to music, Star Spangled Banner, or whether you're visiting the Reagan Museum or the Reagan Library. It's all brainwashing based on feeling.
Well, and I mean, you could say the same thing, unfortunately, about going to a very zealistic religious ceremony where people feel God in their chests. You know, it's a perfect time to indoctrinate people, unfortunately. And of course, we have to separate religion and God, because religion and God really have nothing to do with each other. So when I say that, I'm talking about the organized corporations that are the, you know, 501c3 or 3c that are religions. They're, you know, that was one of the things that wasn't supposed to happen. So when I was walking through this this museum, this library, so called, one of the two of the most prominent things were the Charters of Freedom. So what's the Charters of Freedom? Well, the Charter of Freedom is the Constitution. And what I noticed is that they were constantly stating that because of Reagan and other presidents, we are spreading democracy. We are spreading democracy and freedom. And these two things, literally, I had to sit down and tears came to my eye, because I realized I was the only person in there that realized what that actually meant. Okay, the charter. What is a charter? It's a corporate charter. Okay, charter for freedom. What is freedom? The requirement to obey law. So charters for freedom, when considering the Constitution, And the first book of constitutions was written by Masons in the early 1700s, by the way. So the word constitution is actually something completely different than what people understand. It's actually a debt contract. And, you know, I'm sitting there going, so what we're really doing is we're spreading this false system of democracy where the people completely lose all power because they give it up to a few representatives, which is basically what the United Nations is now taking charge of. Countries are now called states. The United Nations is now the federation that controls all of the states. And the United States, by the way, America, is called a state in the United Nations. It is not called a country. Well, what does that mean? We have 50 states in a central government. Well, if you have 200 states, countries that are now called states, well, there must be a central government that is controlling those states. And if the United States is a state, according to, and it is a member of the United Nations, just like states are members of the United States, we have a problem here. We have a big problem because we're no longer a sovereign country, if that even exists. We are a state of another central government, and we are a member of that. So we're spreading freedom and democracy. Freedom means very, 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 very succinctly, according to law and the legal dictionary, that you must obey the law. You must obey man's law, not natural law, but you must obey the law that is created by government. So if we are spreading freedom and democracy, this system of false paradigm, you know, elections and all that, to ensure that these people stay in power, we are spreading tyranny. We are actually spreading something that is not the free state of man. It is the requirement of other countries now to shape up and obey the laws of a few men who basically are, again, cousins of the queen and, you know, heavily backed in the Masonic guilds. I mean, that's what we're spreading. And that's really hard for people to understand.
Yeah, and you know, the more I'm working and researching all of this kind of stuff, it really comes down to responsibility and taking liability for your responsibility, because it's so easy to give up your liability and responsibility and let someone else take care of it. And that's what people do when they rely on these politicians. And anyone who reads history, they can see that any political group ends up going down the wrong path because people put too much faith on them and they give up the responsibility. The more responsible people are, the less of a chance there is for politicians to take advantage of them, because with responsibility comes education. I mean, people do not value freedom as much as all of the other things that they do with their lives until they don't have it, until it's really obvious that they don't have it. So the politicians, their goal is to keep that illusion and keep you thinking that no, it appears like you have a chain on your leg, but really that's decoration. It's okay. That
it's an ball ankle and bracelet, chain, right?
Yeah, it's just a little ankle bracelet for you. It's just decoration. And then people go through their lives like that.
The chains are in the shape of the Star of David.
Exactly.
Triangle chain.
Exactly. Getting back to that Walmart analogy, I used to travel throughout, well, five states. And in every community that there was a Walmart, all of the mom-and-pop stores, all of the department stores, all of the independently owned family businesses closed up. And so in this takeover of the corporations, they are destroying the middle class. And I think you can compare this to the same thing that happened in communism. When they went into the Ukraine and they got rid of all of the kulaks, the farmers, and basically murdered them all, and which you can also compare to the independent farmers here in this country, and you can see such similarities between communism and capitalism.
The trade unions as well were a big part of that, to seemingly to unite people, but really to control. And that was, again, a Masonic function. And again, they actually say that in this Masonic Bible. I want to read something that might put a little more light on this. And again, this comes from that Supreme Court. That we were talking about earlier, that really is not an individual branch of government. It's quite something different. And Justice Bradley wrote that it is unnecessary to invoke the power given to Congress to regulate commerce in order to find authority to pass the law in question. The act was passed an amendment of the maritime law of the country, and the power to make such amendments is coextensive with the law. It is not confined to the boundaries or class of subjects which limit and characterize the power to regulate commerce, but in maritime matters it extends to all matters and places to which maritime law extends. What does that mean? Chief Justice Marshall stated that admiralty cases do not arise under the Constitution or the laws of the United States, but are as old as navigation itself, and the law, admiralty and maritime, as it has existed for ages, it's nothing new, this country we have, is applied to our courts, to the cases as they arise. Okay, so in other words, the law that this country operates under, for the most part, and keep in mind that everything is being turned into the law of the sea. The law of the sea treaty is something people should look into. Lost is what it's called. The acronym.
Appropriate.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about a law that has existed for a very, very long time, way before this country ever existed. And when this country was created in the charter, in the Constitution, it was specifically said that it would still operate under that international law arising from, you know, your Roman law and your crown and Vatican law, canon law, goes way back. So we're talking about something that is not bound by the Constitution and is not bound by the laws of the United States. We are in international law. And you know, that alone should be enough to tell people, hey, we've either never been the free country because it's in the Constitution, or we've fallen so far now that some other thing is ruling us despite our fictional constitution and laws. I mean, it's something else is going on here.
Indeed.
Well, the you know, when you say that, like, something else is ruling us, and that something else I'm realizing is actually our weakness. Is what's ruling us. Yeah, it's ourselves. You know, we're the ones putting the chains on our feet because we're too lazy to exercise our power. Now, as I'm moving through these different cases in different states, I really used to give too much credit to a lot of these people that are actually running the courts or attempting to enforce this miscellaneous legislative acts. But these people, really, they just work like robots.
Employees.
That's all they are. They're just little robots, and they say, oh, well, this is our policy to do this, blah, blah, blah. This is our procedure. This is how we do things. Well, that might be how they do things, but that's not the correct way to do it. I mean, these people are not even following their own constitutions, their own statutes. They have other sets of rules that they follow in this court that have nothing to do with what's written down in the statutes or the Constitution. And then they try to get you to follow their procedures. I mean, one very simple thing is that they try to get you to pay for a fee in order for you to access the courts. You're not required to pay a fee, but they tell you, well, we can't record, or well, they say we can't file your case unless you pay us a fee. And a fee is an exaction. It's an extortion. You're paying that public officer to do something above and beyond his salary. So what is special treatment that you're getting for that extra fee?
Wouldn't it also be accurate to say, Bert, that if you are paying a fee to go to court, then you're probably in the wrong court?
Well, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get you to buy a service for the wrong court.
Well, I think it goes beyond that. I think they're trying to make you buy a service so that you avoid the right court. In other words, you're paying to go into an administrative court. So you're basically paying, again, to use the Walmart example, you're basically going to Walmart and saying, here, adjudicate my case for a fee, which is not what you want, because if you're paying a fee, you're getting something that's not lawful. You're getting something that's in the legal realm. Another interesting thing is that the Supreme Court decided that maritime cases do not arise under the Constitution or laws of the United States for federal question purposes and must, absent diversity, be instituted in admiralty where there is no jury trial. Another way to know if you're in the wrong court is if you don't have a jury there deciding your case. If you're not in a jury case, you're in admiralty court. You are in a military court. Period. End of story. So if you have a judge deciding your fate, you are in the wrong court. Period.
Well, and even when you, let's say they get you into court and they say, well, see, we're going to empanel a jury for you, and we're going to give you a jury trial. And as soon as they gather up the 12, those 12 take an oath before they sit down as jurors. When they give that oath or affirmation, they just entered a political office. They just became officers of the political establishment.
Right.
And then they are going to rule you. Right. And they're acting no different than in a military court. And then they have a certain number of officers occupying the jury box.
And that's also in that type of case, you still have the judge with the ability to overrule the jury, correct?
Okay, say that again.
In that type of sort of false jury situation where they've sort of created an administrative jury almost, the judge still has the power to overrule what the jury decides.
Yes, because in a true scenario, the jury actually would be the one deciding the law and deciding the facts. But in their world, the judge is the one in charge of the law, and the jury just simply decides the fact.
And that means it's private copyrighted law as well. It's not public law.
It's all backwards. Now, there's a maxim, I have to find it, but there's a maxim that basically says that the minister or whoever is acting as the referee is not supposed to adjudicate anything in your case. That's for the jury.
So a judge is basically a referee. In other words, someone who administrates the case to make sure everything goes properly, but not to decide the fate of the case.
And that kind of brings up jury nullification, which was mentioned on my program earlier today, that the judge is really not supposed to give instructions to the jury and attempt to adjudicate in any way. As you mentioned, he is just there to oversee that the jury does what they are supposed to do, which is to judge whether the law is applicable to the person on trial, or to judge whether the law is applicable or just. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is the bigger way to kind of to look at the whole picture. You have, and I've spoken with Clint about this, that the way they operate the whole thing, they kind of do everything backwards. They, instead of putting the horse in front of the cart, they do it the other way, cart before the horse. But there's actually two horses in front of the cart. The cart represents the evidence, the facts of the case. The first horse attached is the law. And then the horse in front of that horse is actually the duty. Without a duty, the law and the evidence doesn't matter. But they never talk about the duty. They immediately talk about the facts, and then they bring in their law. So see how they do it all backwards?
Right. And so it's important to say that duty is, as Bert is discovering, is one of the most important aspects for the justification of authority or the justification of forced law, military rule. So you're talking about, you know, in the natural realm, again, the best way to define a duty is natural or political, both natural being negative and political being positive. Well, everything government does is in the positive realm. They call it positive law. So when we're talking about a duty in the positive realm, we're talking about a contractual obligation, something that is required by you because you've agreed to a certain set of rules, codes, everything else. For instance, the vehicle code. Is it your duty to obey the vehicle code? Well, that's a really, really huge question to answer because, first, are you a person? Second, are you driving? Third, are you driving a vehicle? Are you, you know, there's so many different things that can be attached to that. So is it your duty to then accept a ticket for going 1 mile over the speed limit? Of course, the speed limit doesn't really mean anything because there is no speed listed. You see the sign, it says speed limit 35. Well, 35 what? 35 horsepower, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It's just a way to extort money from people because people see that sign. They know they were going 40 in a 35, which doesn't mean anything. And they say, well, I'm guilty, and therefore I'm going to agree to the contractual duty that I've signed this ticket, and my duty is now to pay a fine for absolutely nothing, basically. I haven't harmed anybody. I haven't done anything wrong. So the concept of a duty has been taken from the natural realm, which basically it's your duty not to harm anybody or their property. That is the natural definition of a duty. So if I don't want to sell my house to you, you can't do something or you shouldn't do something that will force me to sell it, like eminent domain that government does. That's a positive duty where I'm forced now to sell my home because I have the duty to be patriotic to my country. And therefore, I must give up my property that's been in my family for generations. Does that make sense? Really? No. But that's what's in the Constitution, the Fifth Amendment. Most important amendment in there says that your life, your liberty, and your property can be taken away by the courts with due process. Okay? Very, very important to understand that. This is why you have to read your Constitution 20 times before you actually understand what it's saying.
Well, if you're going to claim it, your Constitution.
Right. And there again, is it your duty to obey what the Constitution says? Because the Constitution doesn't grant any rights. There's no such thing as constitutional rights. That's a misnomer. It's a fallacy. So the question is, do you agree that you have a duty under the Constitution to give up your property to government? Well, I say no. The duty is not there. Just because it says so in the Constitution does not make it so.
Well, and here's the question. It's like, every legislative body, either of the particular state or of the United States, okay, they write legislature. Who is this legislature supposed to bind? Who does it bind? I mean, if you go through your constitution or your statutes and you try to read the power that the legislature has, and you'll see that they have the power, the authority to write law. Anybody has the right to write law, but who's bound by it? That's the key question.
Right. Who has the duty to obey it? So let's go back to your Walmart. If Walmart creates a rule, a code, whatever, who is bound to obey or has a duty, a contractual positive duty, to obey that rule? Anyone? Is it anyone or is it just the employees of Walmart?
Yeah, and you know, that's what I tell everybody make such a big deal about this Constitution. I'm like, well, why don't we make a big deal about the Constitution of Walmart or McDonald's?
Right. What if a Walmart security guard pulls you over on your home, you know, right in front of your house where no Walmart is anywhere around you and says you were speeding and you owe Walmart $25? What's the difference between that and a municipal corporation being the key word, who does the same thing to try to extort money from you? What's the difference? If you can answer that and you can say that you somehow see some authority that the Walmart security guard doesn't have, well, I'd like to see proof of that authority. The only authority anyone can have over you is the authority that you agree to give them. And that's where everything is based on contract. And as soon as people realize that, and as soon as people realize that everything that's being done to them, all the extortion, all the killing, the police officers that we pay to kill us, all of this is being done because we allow it to be done to ourselves. Mm-hmm. We are in a voluntary society that is being run by a militant corporation, and that's it. That's all you need to know. You need to know is how to get out of that situation.
Yeah, now let me talk a little bit about this word, because you've used it several times, authority.
Mm.
And it's a very misused word most often. Clint's using it in the basically general understanding way. But authority, what does it really mean? It means permission. That's really all it means. So you have permission to do what? I mean, if a cop pulls you over, he says, well, I'm operating under authority. Okay. So authority, what permission from who? And then he always quotes the statute. So, okay, the statute gives you the authority. And then who gave the authority to the statute? Well, obviously it was the legislative body. And then who gave the authority to that legislative body? I mean, were they elected into office so they could just write their will? A legislative act, the definition of that is the will of the legislature. So are we supposed to behave just according to their will or the will of the people?
Why not just have a king?
Yeah, that would make it a lot easier.
I mean, it really would. Why not just get rid of the pomp and circumstances of elections and let's just call it like it is? The president is elected not by the people, but by the Electoral College, 435 people who are appointed by the Senate and Congress, the legislature. So, I mean, that's who elects the president. That is the king of the executive branch. So why not just get rid of all this crap that supposedly makes us a democracy, and let's just call it what it is. We're an oligarchy that might as well be a monarchy. I mean, it's just because you have a group of 435 congressmen and 100 senators does not in any way mean that you're not under a single entity. In other words, just because 400 and something people make a decision, half of them say, or less than half say yes, or less than half of them say no, and more than half of them say yes, what's the difference between one person saying yes or no and 400 and something people saying yes or no? If you're talking about tyranny, if you're talking about the appropriations bill that are allowing all of these things to happen, if you're talking about the power that Congress gave to president to create executive orders, then what does it matter who's doing it? If it's 1,000 people or all 300 and something million of us, what is it that makes people think that the law applies to them if they don't agree with the law? Law is all based on the consent of the people under that law. I mean, it's the only way, again, getting back to the theme of this, the only way that that law can apply to you is if it is forced upon you. And that's really the nature of this government.
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's a membership thing. I mean, if you and Clint and I were talking about this, I mean, if you were playing a football game, and before you decide to play the game, you and everybody playing agree to the rules. So if you agree to the rules, and you're in the middle of the game, you decide that you're not going to follow the rules, well, then they can use force to extract you from the game.
Because you've agreed to that.
Yeah, because you consented ahead of time to that type of punishment. Okay, so you have a duty to abide by those rules. And it's no different in a body politic. You decide who's going to create the rules for the body politic, and then you say, well, okay, I'm going to follow those rules.
So what happens then when the referee, when the person in charge of the rules, makes more rules after you agreed to follow the previous rules? What do you do then? What happens then? What if you find out that your referee is the uncle or the father of one of the teammates of the other team? You know, what if you find out that the referee has a $100,000 bet on the fact that you or your team will lose the game? Well, that's exactly what government is doing. Government literally controls the markets and bets against the markets or for the markets, puts put options on all of its stock investments, uses all of the public's money. It's in a complete conflict of interest because it literally owns all these corporations that it regulates. What do you do if you find out that your referee or your government is playing for the corporations when it's supposed to be protecting the people from the corporations, but it's actually the main power behind the corporations? What do you do? Do you keep supporting it? Do you keep sending it your taxpayer money only to be invested more in the corporations that it's allowing to patent your human genes? I mean, at what point do people wake up to this and say, enough's enough, you no longer have my support, I withdraw my consent, your law means nothing to me, it's nothing but a private, copyrighted law administered by the courts and copyrighted, owned by the Bar Association. The International Bar Association, by the way, not the national one. The Bar Association is actually part of the executive branch. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole thing is just insanity all bundled up into what is called law.
Yeah, what they call their law.
Right.
Because whenever they're and that's the other thing that I tell people is whenever you're dealing with this so-called public servant, keep in mind that they're always speaking with a forked tongue. So do not accept anything they say as true. Actually, there's a Supreme Court case to that effect, that if a public servant tells you A and he meant B and you accepted it as A, you're the one that's in trouble for accepting it as A, because you should question everything he or she tells you. You're not supposed to accept anything at face value. So the bottom line for people is to realize that the goal of this body politic is to incorporate everything, because it's much easier if everything is controlled by corporations, because then the corporations can just simply act as agents of the bigger mothership, which is, of course, the United States.
And that includes people as well.
Yeah, because they incorporate you into the corporations by making you into an employee. So if everything is a corporation and they require you to be a U.S. citizen with a social security number in order to be able to get a job and eat and exist, well, now they have perfect control over everything. But the truth is, you don't need a social security, you don't need a birth certificate, you don't need any of those things to live and to engage with anyone you want to, so long as you're exchanging something of value for whatever it is that you want.
And that brings up, well, what if we all have those things, birth certificate, a social security number, and we are already part of the system? The big question is, how do we extract ourselves from this tyranny?
Well, and that's something that I'm going through. Bert has already gone through his own version of what I'm going to do. And like I said, I'm going to document my personal journey. Which means withdrawing from Social Security. Actually, it means withdrawing your original application, because really the application is what is monetized and created as a, if you will, a trust that represents the membership that the Social Security number is. But again, you don't own your Social Security number. The Social Security number actually owns you, and government owns the Social Security number. So, you know, you got to realize that is the the one of the big problems is that everybody is part of this company called the IRS, which is by the way incorporated in Guam, not the United States. It operates under different functions, one of them private, one of them public. Its revenue department is also in Guam, even though the internal revenue department is in Washington, D.C. They're two different things, one private, one public. So we're talking about, again, just a private corporation that has been granted power by Congress, basically, or created by Congress. It is nothing but a contractual relationship, and you have to... Again, I like to tell this to people over and over, because unless you get this into your head, you're never going to understand what remedy is or how to separate. The word solution, one of the most used words in all of patriot truth, whatever, the word solution is such an important word, because legally, and that's all that matters, legally... The word solution means the end of or a satisfaction of a contract. Okay? That is the legal definition of solution. So what is the solution to this tyranny, to being a member, a person, a citizen? It's to end your contract. It will never be anything else. Okay, the solution will always be the definition of the word solution, which is to end your contract, your contractual relationship with government. That's it. If you want to be a free man in the sense that these laws, and by laws I mean tyrannies, I mean extortion or exaction, I mean punishment and pain for not paying a $10 fine, incarceration, these are all things that rely on your membership to have, as Bert was saying, permission or authority, because authority is permission, to happen. So if you don't have that contractual relationship anymore, if you go in and you say, well, listen, I don't want to have a connection to Social Security, and therefore I'm withdrawing my original fraudulent application, because the application is everything. There was never an application. It never existed. It's gone. I have no ties to you anymore. At that point, you start doing other things. You say, I'm no longer a voter. I'm no longer in the civil service. I no longer can be drafted. Because think about it. What is the draft? Why can people be drafted?
Because they go in and register.
They go and they register. Everything is about registration. Everything. Your car is registered. Your home is registered. Your children are registered. And that's why all of these things are property of the state. How can you be drafted into a military to go kill women and children if you're not registered as someone who can be drafted? Well, the only way to satisfy that, the only way to get rid of that duty, is to end your contract. It is to remove yourself from the system, unregister yourself, get the heck out of there. There's no way you're going to draft me for an unjust, unlawful occupation of another country to kill women and children in the name of a corporation called the United States. I'm not going to do it. I will sit in jail if it's necessary, but I will not kill people on behalf of this corporation. It's not patriotic. There's nothing good about the military of today. And you can see that by the commercials and propaganda that they're putting out everywhere. The Navy, a global force for good. What do you mean a global force for good? Global? Right. I'm sorry, I might sound a little angry, but I'm... I guess it's a...
You're just passionate.
Yeah, I mean, come on, people.
Okay, let me touch on something here. The definition of law, okay? Listen to this. That which must be obeyed and followed by citizens, comma, subject to sanctions, comma, or legal consequences, comma, is a law. So if you fulfill those points, you now have a law.
Wow.
Especially if you sign it.
So, Bert, who does the law apply to?
Well, it would apply to those who enter into the so-called contractual law, or whatever it is that you sign.
So who is Walmart's law?
Yeah.
You know, so who does Walmart's law affect?
Yeah, it can only affect their employees or, to a minimal degree, you as a customer if you come in to exchange something with them. Okay? And it's the same thing with the United States or the state or whatever. What they try to do is they try to get you to believe that you are on duty 25 hours a day. Okay? One example is, if you actually work for Walmart and you do your 8 hours in a day, when you go home, are you still under duty for Walmart? Well, of course not. You know, you left. You're no longer bound by Walmart regulations. So if you're interacting with this body politic as a citizen, which would be maybe voting them into office or whatever, so you cast your vote and then you leave, are you still on duty? You know, when you're engaging with them, exchanging some kind of a benefit, that's where they get you, because the benefit may extend indefinitely. And as long as the benefit is there indefinitely, like the Social Security number, well, guess what? Now you're on duty indefinitely.
I love the way that you say on duty as opposed to just a duty. It's like a police officer only has his supposed authority while he's on duty. Well, a citizen is – when are you on duty as a citizen? When are you driving, for instance? When are you doing all of these things? Is it 24/7 or is it just when you admit to it? Is it when you, you know, contractually – do you punch a clock and say I'm a citizen now and you know, when I'm sleeping, I'm just sleeping. I'm not a – I mean, at what point – where's the border? Where's the – where's the limitation of citizenship?
Yeah, and that's the beauty. I mean, the more you look at this system that they have set up, and you have to admire the people who put it together, because it's a beautiful system of a make-believe voluntary servitude. Because supposedly you have public servants, but what has happened now is the public servants are making servants out of the public. So who are the servants serving? They're serving no one, you know. And all this information and research that Clint has done about the scaffers, you can see that a huge portion of the population, they exist for one purpose, and that is to collect money for retirement funds. They have no other purpose in life or in their service. No.
It's very important to get as many public employees as possible so that you get more investments into that pension system, yeah, including Social Security, by the way.
Well, there you go, because when you have that Social Security number, you're actually acting as a public servant. Now you're also paying into the fund. Now you're also paying into the picnics or whatever that these politicians can take, you know,
well,
for their planes and everything.
Would you say it's safe to say that as with a Social Security number is actually an employee number?
Mm-hmm, that's exactly what it is.
And as an employee, say if you have an employee number from Walmart, well, guess what? That signifies that you're contractually obligated and have a duty to follow Walmart's rules. So we're all employees of the United States, because we basically have sold our souls to it, because we're going to get some meager benefit at the end of our life if we should live so long. Yeah. If the number one killer, which is doctors and pharmaceuticals, don't get us first, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I mean, a lot of people get hung up. They say, well, you know, I have a Social Security number. I have a birth certificate. I have a driver's license. I have all these things. Well, it would be nice not to have those numbers, but, you know, I also have a Costco card and I have all kinds of other membership cards. Well, I'm not under any requirement to exercise my Costco membership, you know, or Sam's membership or 24-hour fitness membership. But when I exercise it, then I have to abide by those rules, right, that go with the membership. Right. So we can have all these things. We just don't have to exercise it if you don't want to. And when someone comes up to us and they say, hey, you're bound by this regulation, blah, blah, I said, well, buddy, prove that I was, in fact, exercising the membership at that moment.
Well, let's take that across the board to your driver's license again, because you're a card-carrying member of the Motor Vehicle Code. So the question is, when a police officer, let's say, comes up to you when you're walking down the street with no vehicle in sight and asks you for your driver's license, why is he asking you for a license to drive for identification? Because it's not identification in any way, shape, or form. Why doesn't he ask you for your Costco card? Why doesn't he ask? I mean, he's specifically asking you for a driver's license. Well, what could possibly be the reason that he's doing that? Well, if you think about it really hard, it's simply to make you verify that you are a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's it. He has to get you into his quote-unquote jurisdiction, under his authority, because you've just voluntarily submitted to his authority by giving him permission to assume that you're a driver at the moment when you're not even in your car.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is... It is. You're right. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant system that only master masons of the Jewish mind could probably come up with.
Then, think of the other occasions when you're asked for a driver's license. For instance, when you go to fly, you have to show your driver's license, or when you cash a check.
You actually don't. That's the thing Bert's, I think, trying to really get across, is you don't need these things to fly or to get a passport or anything like that.
Okay, but they ask you for them. So what do you say?
Well, a friend of ours actually has, because he's not a citizen, he's gone through the process that I'm going to go through. He has a notarized piece of paper from a notary that he knows that states that he is a national of the United States, not a citizen of the United States, but a national of America, and that he has permission. I mean, this is identification. Identification is whatever you want it to be. If I say that my library card is identification, then it is identification. Okay, just because the TSA says what identification is does not mean that it is identification. Just because the police say it is identification does not mean that it is identification. Identification depends on what form of person you are. If you're not a person, in other words, you're not a citizen, then none of that applies to you. You cannot ask for identification because you don't have any. You're not a citizen. So what he is showing is simply a documented form of, if you want to call it identification, a notarized form of identification, which is
a statement of who you are.
A statement. That's all it is. It's a document, and it is as legal as anything else, and it requires no contract whatsoever to obey any rules. And they have to accept it because they cannot hinder you. That's not what they're there for. They're there to promote and to protect the rules of government. Well, if you're not bound by those rules, you don't have to participate in them. It's all voluntary.
Now, another word that needs to be clarified is the word that you were just using, the word legal. Now, legal, people mainly associate the word legal with statutes, and that's not correct. Legal basically means something that is not unlawful. Okay, it's something that is not illegal, that is not wrong. So you can actually ask any cop that is attempting to do anything on you, say, is what you're doing legal? And if he says yes, then you can ask for proof that it's legal. Because if he's operating outside of law, and I mean natural law, outside of the principles of law, then it's illegal. And a particular rule is not by itself illegal, which is the thing that people need to realize about statutes. The statutes in themselves are not, quote-unquote, illegal, but it's when they are misapplied that they become illegal.
Yeah, and it's important to say that the only way that government can have this kind of control over people is to first make everything illegal and then make it legal through licensing and other forms of registration, that kind of thing. Permission, again. So if a government makes basically breathing illegal, and then gives you license to breathe, you know, if you breathe the wrong way or breathe too much oxygen, you're breaking the law, or you're breaking the legality of the law. But what they're doing in the first place is not lawful, because they're limiting a natural right. And no natural right can ever be usurped without permission, that is, can never be usurped by a positive right. A government or man-made law can never trump your natural right. It's just the natural law. It will never change. It will always be that way. But we all voluntarily give up those natural rights, that natural God-given protection, to basically accept things like the Constitution. The Constitution has nothing to do with protecting your natural rights at all in any way, shape, or form. It's purely a political document made by men.
Okay, let me highlight something that you just said about the licensing. Now, you can take a perfect, harmless activity like walking down the sidewalk, okay? But if you license that activity, now you can make it illegal if you are licensed and you don't have the license.
Well, protesting or free speech is a good example. What have they done? They've made free speech illegal. Okay, not
by requiring a license.
Right. It's not that it's unlawful. In other words, if a police officer comes up to me and says, you don't have a permit for free speech, well, I don't need one. You see, the reason they want you to get a permit for free speech is because otherwise you can do what you want. But if you get a permission to do something, then they can regulate it.
Right. Right.
Exactly. And the same thing applies. I mean, they have licenses for getting married, right? So,
right.
So they can regulate the marriage.
What does that mean? That means that marriage is illegal. I mean, you got to think about these things. Why do I need a license to do something out of love and under God or whatever your position is there? What exactly is it about marriage that is illegal? Well, absolutely nothing. You just have to realize that marriage is not what you think it is. I don't promote marriage. I say go through the ceremony, do everything, and do it out of honor, not out of a legal paper that says you're, of course, marriage being a legal term. It has nothing to do with the act that you're doing. All marriage is, when it comes to the state, is a contract. It's a contract. It's volunteering to conjoin estates and trusts. It's nothing that will benefit you in any way except in a legal fashion. It does nothing to express your love. It does nothing to protect your children. It's horrible, actually, if you really think about it.
Yeah, so one thing that I always like to say whenever I have an opportunity is that it's very easy to stop creating servants for these corporations. Number one, you don't need a license to get married, so stop doing that. Okay, just get married in your own church, your own religion, whatever. And then when you give birth to your baby, do not give the name to the hospital or the midwife. Because what they're going to do is they're going to take the baby of that hospital, of that, the name of that baby, give it to the Social Security Administration and issue a Social Security number, thereby creating the person. Then do not get your baby a birth certificate. Go get them baptized with your church or whatever. That's just as good. And right there, you just made sure that that baby is going to be free for the rest of his life and won't have to fight this make-believe person that they're constantly trying to tag on the rest of us.
And you got to keep in mind, they can choose, because they're a natural-born person, and if you consider that, they can choose to join the corporation later if they want to be a slave. Right. It's not like it's you can only do it when you have no cognition of what's happening, you know?
I think it's important here to bring in the fact that now, when you want a church leader to marry you, that you have to present a certificate to them saying that you have obtained permission for that priest or that bishop or whatever to marry you.
All right, well, Deanna.
And so churches are corporations, and so they are in this system too.
Why is the priest required to do that?
Because it's a corporation.
Because it's a corporation. No church should be a corporation. You don't need permission to be a church.
Exactly.
You don't need permission to assemble and worship God, however you're worshiping. I mean, that the whole thing is everybody should actually be boycotting any church that's organized and incorporated. It's oh man, I mean, we could spend a
blasphemy.
Whole hour on this.
So
yeah,
where,
it,
so blasphemy. Where would you get married? Okay, if you go to the courthouse, you have to have a registration of some sort. If you want to be married in a church or by a church leader, you have to have a registration.
There's no reason you could not rent out a church and get married in a church. I mean, anybody who do you think you need? Do you think I need permission to marry you? Do you think I need to be a minister to marry you? Because marriage isn't necessarily a religious ceremony. It's a time
honored contract between the man, the woman, and God.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a natural contract. It's not. It's a mm-hmm. duty in the natural realm. You're agreeing to, you know, and I guess it's important to say a really touchy subject is the gay marriage thing, because we're talking about, again, a contract. So I think what people don't understand why they're against it, because they don't understand what they're rallying against. Because basically what we're saying is that a man has a duty to marry, to procreate. Okay, that's kind of the duty of any species, and it is built into it as a natural need and desire that has been built into us to propagate the species. So there is a duty, a natural duty, for a man to be with a woman. So if you're talking about a gay marriage, then that duty gets basically pushed aside, and you're not fulfilling that natural duty. And this is a very important thing. And if you look at history, and you understand, you know, they make all these shows about how people would get married and then have mistresses or gay lovers on the side. Well, the man or woman was fulfilling their duty through marriage. Marriage was never out of love. That's a relatively new concept, to be honest. I mean, if you look at history, all marriages were very contractual in nature and very much to pass on the estate of a family, etc. Okay, marriage was always a trust. It was always something that was in a legal form.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you broke with that and you actually married out of love, you were looked down upon. You were actually hated. The family would disown you because they didn't want you to pass on the family trust. So it's very important. Jews, for instance, will not allow the trust to go to their daughter, because then the male can come in and take the trust. I mean, it's a time-honored legal tradition called marriage, and that is a legal concept. So I don't know if I'm being clear here, but the duty of a man and a woman to procreate is really, I think, what the big deal is, and I don't even think people really understand what they're rallying against when they're fighting. So, you have to kind of take morals and values out of this when you're looking at the history of marriage, because really, the son of a prince or the son of a very wealthy family has the duty to marry to keep the assets in the family. That does not mean, and never really did, that he would be faithful and in love to his wife, and vice versa. That's not what marriage was ever for. And that's important. It's not pleasant, and nobody probably wants to hear it, but it's very important so that you understand what marriage actually is. Now, take that, put it aside. If you want to go that route, great. But what we're saying is, look, if you're actually doing the right thing, and you're actually marrying out of love, and not because you're a bloodline relative of something that has to keep it in the blood, then, you know, marry out of love. Do you need marriage to have a contract that says, I am leaving everything to this person? No. You can actually create a separate contract, just a trust. You don't have to be married legally for that. So there is nothing at all that would actually make marriage a necessity, other than to make you basically a slave, make your children property of the state. That's, I mean, that's what marriage really does,
right.
And it's unfortunate.
I wonder if they didn't kind of criminalize or vilify common law marriages in order to provoke people to feel that they had to get a license give it credibility. And isn't that what they are also doing with same-sex marriages in order to give it credibility, but in order to take control over every couple who decide to
Well, if you think about it, though, that whole thing, whether it's, a common law marriage, either way, if you think about the ridiculous, you're actually asking the government, the state, permission to have a legal contract together to be together. I mean, who needs permission? Marriage is not illegal. So you don't need a license to get married. The only reason you need a license is because there is a specific legal concept called marriage. It could be called anything. It could be called Bert. It could be called Jonathan. But it's called marriage, right? And that's a legal concept. And all it's doing is providing certain civil protections to those people. Well,
yeah, let's use an example of Walmart. Suppose Walmart says, hey, we get to give you 20% off your purchases for life if you're married through Walmart. And everybody starts coming to Walmart and get married. It's the same thing.
Oh, my goodness.
There's no difference. But for that marriage, Walmart says, okay, we're going to give you 20% off for everything you buy, but then we get to control 51% of everything that you will come together for the rest of your life. Anything that you're going to own together, Walmart actually will have a 51% control interest on it.
Wow. that's what it's all about. Yes.
It's all about contractual nature of anything you do with regards to government, any license, anything. It all has to do with that contractual nature and all has to do with control.
It's so that when you die, if you die intestate, then the government can come in and take your assets.
Absolutely, because it owned your assets in the first place.
Yes.
You just have permission to use government's money. You just have permission to use government's house. You have permission to raise your children that are government's children. I mean, that's really what's happened. You have permission to marry the one you love, even though you don't need it. And because of that, your estate gets taxed 50% if you both die.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
So what people need to realize is that whenever the government wants you to sign something, it's because the way they color it is they're giving you some great benefit, but people don't think about the cost of that benefit.
Yeah.
That benefit may only be temporary for a couple of weeks, but the obligation may be for life.
And I think it's important to state here, because this whole conversation to someone might sound very, say, unpatriotic or very un-American. And it's important to note, very, very important to say, that the United States is not America. What we're talking about, just like Walmart, is not Salt Lake City. Okay, the United States is not America. The United States is simply a central governing corporation that is outside of the United States. It's in its own little district, and it has nothing to do with America. It is patriotism has nothing to do with the United States, because the United States is not America. It is not the 50 states in the land of the 50 states. It is not the people of America. Okay, what it is a controlling entity that has convinced the people of America to contract with it and become the United States. If you want to be patriotic, you want to be an American, you're going to have to withdraw from the United States. It's that simple, because the United States is not America.
Yes, and and it's all in their constitution. I mean, in the constitution, it talks about the militia, but at the same time, it talks about armies that Congress can't raise armies. Armies is not the militia. Armies is armies for Congress, for them. The army has nothing to do with the people. It's their army. The legal definition of army is a group of men in the business of war.
And the business, very important word, and it's to protect the government from the people, and that means countries, or it means domestically the enemies of the state, which are the people.
Yeah, right. Because the only group that is supposed to that has the responsibility and liability to protect our freedom, according to the United States Constitution, is the militia.
Right, and then no of course else. You also have to figure in other entities like the CIA. Which is used to create chaos in other countries. That is in addition to the armed forces. And then you also have to look at the FBI and Homeland Security. What are those entities for?
All part of the business of war.
Mm-hmm. Against the citizens.
That's all it is. It's a business of war, and it's a business of controlling and gaining interest control. I mean, that's what it is. So I've always said the most important thing that the United States wants to do is to create citizens. Where they create the citizens doesn't matter. Mm. As long as they create more citizens, that's all they care about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because remember, if you're a United States citizen and you're living abroad, say in England, you still pay your citizen taxes, which means you pay your Social mm-hmm. Security taxes in America. They have agreements that ensure that. It's by force. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's citizenship. You can be a citizen anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter. You're a citizen of a 10-mile square piece of land, a corporation called Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. You're on a virtual piece of plastic or piece of saran wrap that's been wrapped around the entire United States, America, I should say, and all of its insular possessions, and you're walking on cellophane, and that cellophane is all attached to Washington, D.C. You're not touching the land. You're not a man anymore. You're not living as a free man. Your whole, I mean, you know, to use the Matrix, you're a battery. You're a commodity.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I mean, and again, I keep going back to the Walmart or Costco or Sam's Club. I mean, if you have a Sam's Club membership, it's got your name on the card. Is that you? No, that's a membership image of you within Sam's Club. So your membership, which is called the United States citizenship, it's an image of you within that scenario, within that corporation, but that is not you. No different than you on the Sam's membership card.
Well, now, Bert, you said the business of war, which is a really, really, I mean, it's a horrific term if you think about it. It's talking about, you know, the military-industrial complex and all that. But, Deanna, do you remember the show we did about the report from Iron Mountain?
Yes.
And transitioning from a war system to a peace system?
Yes.
So what we are transitioning from is an economy that is based on war. And as anybody can figure out real quick, that the most prosperous time in this country has been when we have been in some form of war. Okay? So how do you transition, because war is so profitable, how do you transition from a war system to a peace system? In other words, a war economy to a peace economy. Well,
they haven't done that since the Civil War.
Well, that's what we're talking war. About. That's exactly eternal terrorism. You know, it's the business of war has turned into the business of peace. But you see, peace is much more violent than war, because in order to keep the peace, there has to be the constant threat of war. And to keep the illusion of the constant threat of war, the United States must commit terrible acts of violence against its own people. Therefore, you have the Boston bombing. You have school shootings. You have all these things that it's
9/11.
So obvious. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. If you understand that, you understand how we are being manipulated into what they refer to in that report as the peace system, the peace economy, an economy that is more supportive of weapons and war than it ever has been, but that's in peace. So our military is a global force for good, for peace. Everything we do now is not as a military force killing people. No, we are peacekeepers killing people.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's peaceful control.
And all of this, again, This is full circle here. All of this is because we support it. We consent to it. The military goes to other countries on the presumed consent of all people. And the only way to make them understand that we no longer support that is literally to withdraw our support, withdraw our membership, withdraw our funding.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, let me give you another example. And this is something that anyone can do anywhere in the 50 states. If you go to a store to buy a particular product, let's say you're going to go buy some shampoo and it has a price of a dollar. When you go to check out, they add 6 cents to it. Where is the agreement that you signed that you agreed to pay extra for that product?
Well, and you know, I wrote a big thing on this because it's the seller's tax. You know, if you think about it, the reason that that tax is being charged is because the corporation that's selling the product is making a profit in dollars from that product. So it's really Walmart that owes the tax. But government has given permission to its investment-held corporations to pass that tax on to the taxpayer. So what Bert's really saying is, prove that I'm a taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you...
I'm on duty to pay it.
Yeah, am I on duty? Am I...
So anyone can do this. Anyone can go to any store and say, no, I'm refusing to pay that tax. And if you're not going to sell me the product, well, now I'm going to sue you.
Whoa. Have you ever said that?
Sue them.
Absolutely.
How would you relate that to the kosher tax that we all have to pay for most of the food that we purchase?
Bert, you're in the process of this, right?
What kind of tax is that?
They call it the kosher tax. you want to explain that, Deanna?
It's a ripoff. That 2% of the population now have demanded for some decades that the rabbi go into all of these corporations that are producing foods and other commodities for the population, that the rabbi must make certain that they are producing the food in a correct and proper way, or whatever product they're producing. Mm-hmm. And so the corporations pay the rabbis millions upon millions of dollars a year, to accommodate the 2%, and yet it's the rest of us that also have to pay that kosher tax when we buy a product. And you can tell a product is kosher by the several marks that might be on it. It could be a U, it could be a K, it could be a number of different symbols.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, any tax is an exaction. It's an imposition that requires some kind of a prior agreement to pay.
Well, if we're not Jewish, why do we have to pay a kosher tax on the food that we purchase?
Well, you don't. And that's what I'm saying. That imagine if a percentage of the people actually sue these corporations for forcing these taxes on them. I mean, we could change the system.
Well, and that's just it. You know, like Bert really opened my eyes, and he kept telling me, you cannot be afraid to sue. You cannot be afraid to sue. Suing is one of the most important things you can do. And I don't mean suing McDonald's for $1 million because it spilled hot coffee on you or because you spilled their hot coffee on you. This is not the point. The point is to set precedent. So if I sue the corporation that's selling me a product and I say I refuse to pay this hidden kosher tax or I refuse to pay this sales tax because I know that that sales tax is not benefiting the citizenry at all, it's being invested, whatever your reason is, you have to sue and get that on the record so that it's on the record. And then other people can follow and suddenly you've eliminated a tax or you've stopped a tyranny. But until people start suing and flooding the courts with their own personal statements of law, which is a lawsuit, nothing's going to change. Withdrawing consent, mm-hmm. all of that stuff has to happen on the record, not just us talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, because I mean, I actually I got into an argument with the manager and a girl at Home Depot one time, and I said, well, you know, I don't want to pay the tax. And she says, well, we have to collect the tax. We're required to collect. So, well, you might be required to collect it, but I'm not required to pay it. You know?
And how did she respond?
Well, I mean, she even got the manager down and everything. The manager said, "Well, I can't sell you the product." And I'm like, "Well, you know, if you refuse to pay me to sell me the product without showing the requirement that I have to pay this additional cost of the product, well, you know, you're violating my rights." And then he just simply said, "Well, I guess you'll have to sue us."
And then what happened?
Well, I had to get the thing, so I paid the tax. And left, you know? But one of my my projects that I want to do, I have way too many projects already, but
yeah.
is actually I want to go to a place like Home Depot, a very well-known store, and I'm gonna have the exact change in my hand. I'm going to have the product. I'm going to lay the – and I'm going to have witnesses, of course. I'm
right,
going to lay
and
the
– and a camera.
Lay the money on the counter. Say, "There's the price. Now I'm going to stand over there, and if you believe I committed theft, I'm sitting over there. You can call whatever number of cops you want to call."
Wow.
You know.
Yeah, and if you – you know, Deanna, I sent you a video, and I think I sent it to you too, Bert, about a congressman in – a representative in California who – three times during the tax, during the IRS.
Oh, yes.
You know, he said
voluntary.
It's a voluntary tax. It's a voluntary tax. And the IRS commissioner or whoever he was talking to agreed. Yes, it's a voluntary tax. And the point was that we must keep the illusion alive so that people continue to pay the voluntary tax.
And that's what he said.
It really is. And I was shocked that he actually said that on the record like that. And that needs to be followed up. People need to invite him for an interview because, I mean, he has just said something that means that everybody that's in jail needs to be released immediately.
Yes.
Because they didn't volunteer to pay the tax and therefore they were put in jail. That's I mean, against their... According to him, that's against the law. And, of course, all tax is voluntary. That's the again, all law is voluntary. I mean, you have to understand. I mean, go ask anybody if there is any law that is required. And there is no law that is required. It's all based on consent. It's all based on voluntary acceptance. So, I mean... If you consider that for just a moment, that means basically everybody in jail, aside from, you know, your murderers and rapists who actually have harmed people, which is a very small number compared to everyone else, everybody that's in there administratively for not paying a tax or for smoking a joint or any so-called offense against this civil code is there wrongfully, and they must be released immediately. That, I mean, if you think about that for a moment... And especially if you think about these famous people who've gone up against the IRS and lost, the IRS cannot have an authority to put people in jail if their tax is voluntary. No matter what they say or what contract you sign, there is no ability for the IRS to force people or the courts to force people into jail as debt slaves, basically. I mean, it's...
Unless you work for that corporation like Sherry Jackson...
No, even then, it's a private corporation. So Walmart couldn't force.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Walmart couldn't force Sherry Jackson to do something that is unlawful just because it makes its own rules that says it is legal. You know,
right.
you can't break the law. You can't incarcerate someone for not, you know, paying a tax. It's unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if only we could organize people in their perspective, you know, areas, their counties, and make people understand that they have access to the grand jury system, we could actually probably start getting people out of jail that have been put there wrongfully because the jury would decide that they are there wrongfully. And that would overrule any administrative court. The power of the people really lies in that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start setting these kind of precedents, you wouldn't even have to go to court, technically. You could probably just start getting summary judgments out of the court clerk.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have to go in front of the judge because the court clerk is much more powerful than the judge. So the judge is always getting kickbacks, of course, and the court registry investment system is you know, makes money off every prisoner it puts in there.
Sure.
As commodities, you know, bonding prisoners.
We're all commodities.
Right. And so it's going to take what I guess the point here is that it's going to take people acting individually and as a group of individuals with single voices to start literally changing the system. Otherwise, we are simply in a contractual servitude that we'll never get out of, and it's only going to get worse and worse and worse.
Right.
Yeah. Now let me highlight on a point that Deanna just brought up. Suppose I start a membership, something similar to 24-hour fitness. Okay. Would it be to the advantage of my new club that I'm setting up to have lots of members or few members, especially if down the road I was thinking about creating additional wealth based on the value of the company? So the more members I have attached to my corporation, the more value it has, especially when I'm communicating with other corporations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing applies to the United States. The more members they have in their club, the more valuable it is.
Sure.
That's why, you know, I mean, they make this big deal about controlling immigration and all that kind of stuff. That's all BS. They have to maintain a certain number of members in order to keep their value of the corporation up
right.
to speed.
Right. And so since they kill so many through via abortion and all kinds of other things, they have to replace those aborted babies with immigrants.
Yeah. So look how many citizens they added just by with Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know. So wow. So they, it's all part of the system. But anyway, I got to get going. So
all righty.
Have to wrap it up.
Okay, well, I really appreciate both of you gentlemen being on the program, and I think we definitely need the kind of education that you present, because without knowing what we can do and what our rights are, we're never going to do anything. We'll continue to be living under a tyranny.
Hey, you know, Deanna, I'd like to end with a quote, if you don't mind, from... you know, it took me years to figure out what this guy says in two or three paragraphs. It's from the intimate papers of Colonel House, which was found in the Yale Library. And, you know, like I said, it took forever to put these pieces together. And here it is written in a very, very concise statement. He says, quote, "Very soon every American will be required to register their biological property in a national system designed to keep track of people that will operate under the ancient system of pledging. By such methodology, we can compel people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for our fiat paper currency." Debt slavery, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
"Every American will be forced to register or suffer not being able to work or earn a living." Register means social security number. "They will be chattel." We are chattel, actually, "and will hold the security interest over them forever by operation of the law merchant." Law merchant is admiralty law. "Under the scheme of secured transactions." The scheme of secured transactions. Every time you put your money in a bank, it's secured. "Americans, by unknowingly or unwittingly delivering the bills of lading," in other words, the interest and tax on dollars, "to us, will be rendered bankrupt and insolvent forever to remain economic slaves through taxation secured by their pledges. We are pledged as citizens to pay all of these taxes in the form of debt slavery. Every dollar that's created, of course, goes back to government." It says, "they will be stripped of their rights," which we have basically done. We've given our natural rights up for political rights, constitutional rights, if you want to call them that. Civil rights, really, "given a commercial value," again, we've done that, "designed to make us a profit, and they will be none the wiser, for not one man in a million could ever figure our plans out, and if by accident one or two would figure it out, we have our arsenal of plausible deniability."
Bert, you're quite wrong. They're wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. "After all, this is the only logical way to fund government, by floating liens and debts to the registrants," that's us,
mm-hmm,
"in the form of benefits and privileges. Everything that government gives you is nothing but a benefit or a privilege. It is not a right. They will inevitably reap to us huge profits beyond our wildest expectations and leave every American a contributor to this fraud, which we will call social insurance.
Wow.
Everybody contributes to social security, social insurance. This statement, it took me years to figure all this out. I'm one of those one in a million, I suppose. And here it is, written for me by one of the bastards who created the system.
Yes. And his father's name was spelled H-A-U-S, I believe.
Mm.
He's a crypto.
Yeah, well, of course.
No surprise there. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me today. We'll have to do this again.
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Getting this word out is so important, you know.
It is. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.